getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund. I'm your host, and we are on to another episode. Today, I have two guests, Lacey Bentley and Heather Kronmiller. They are authors of the new book, Going Deeper for Women, How the Inner Child Impacts Your Love and Sex Addiction. Lacey is a woman's relationship and recovery coach, author, and adult educator. She has been helping women overcome addictive behaviors since 2000. Her love addiction recovery journey began in mid-2010 with 12 steps and continues as she helps other women rebuild their lives. She also wrote Addicted to Love in 2018 and was a guest on the Addicted Mind episode number 57, where she talks about that book. So you can definitely check out that episode as well, episode 57. And Heather Kronmiller is a licensed independent clinical social worker, certified sex addiction therapist with a wealth of experience spanning over a decade in the mental health field. In her Minnesota-based private practice, Kronmiller Counseling, Heather specializes in guiding individuals through the challenging journey of overcoming sex and love addiction. She proudly describes herself as a mindfulness nerd, consistently incorporating mindfulness and compassion-focused interventions to empower her clients on their healing journey. And today, Lacey and Heather are going to share their stories of how they wrote this book, but also how they got to the place of writing this book and knowing each other and working together to create this book for women out there who are struggling with love and sex addiction. You can tell that both of them are incredibly passionate about the work they do and committed to helping the people they encounter in their work. So it was great to talk with them. It's a great book and a great episode, and I know you guys will like this episode. I think you'll get a lot out of it. And if you're getting a lot out of the Addicted Mind podcast, write us a review. That really does help the podcast get found. And if you want to continue the conversation online, go to our Facebook group, type in the Addicted Mind podcast and click join. All right, everyone, let's start this episode. All right, everyone, welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. I have two wonderful guests today, Heather Kronmiller and Lacey Bentley. And we're going to talk about a book you authored with Eddie Caparucci on working with your inner child. And the title of the book's Going Deeper for Women, How the Inner Child Impacts Your Love and Sex Addiction. So we're just going to jump right in. And why don't you both introduce yourselves, and we'll get into talking about, you know, why you guys wanted to write this book and why it's important to you and how this can help women out there who are struggling with love and sex addiction. So let's just jump in. Who wants to go first?
I can.
All right, great.
Hey, I'm Lacey Bentley, and I have been a women's recovery coach since about 2017. I published my first book. I was writing it in 2017, published it in May 2018. And my story, I realized I was a love addict because I developed something that's very common to us called erotic transference with my male therapist. And what I didn't know then was I needed a dad who loved me. And these were not to be cliche, but these were my daddy issues. And I desperately needed a dad. And he originally felt like this big brother who was wiser and so great. And he knew all the answers and it was really helpful. And then my heart just didn't know what to do with the attachment and connection I was developing. And all of a sudden, everything just went down a rabbit hole. And it got really difficult for me to even see him or be around him. And that's when I went, I think something's up. And then I was at dinner with a friend who, all of my clients know this story, points a steak knife at me. I have a waiter's arm around me, right? And she's like, shouldn't you be doing your job to him? And says to me, you're married. And it was that night I realized these two things had, like, they were coming from the same place and I needed help. This was out of control and I did not like where it was headed. And so the next day, I found my first recovery meeting.
Wow. So you realize in there, like, this is, I'm getting help, but all this other stuff is coming up and this is a bigger issue for me. Even though I'm in therapy, I'm not realizing it. And then all of a sudden, here you are and kind of having that light bulb moment. All right. We'll jump into that some more. Heather, you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Absolutely. So I'm Heather Kronmiller. I am a therapist in Minnesota. And I'm sure you heard the accent when I said Minnesota. Everyone is like, oh, yeah, I hear that. I hear that.
I love it.
Yeah. So I have been a therapist for about a decade. I worked with sex offenders for a very long time. And now I've kind of switched over to love and sex addiction. The reason that I got into this work is because I am a person in recovery. I'm a love addict. Lacey was my coach. That's how we met. Essentially, I always felt like there was this void that I had. And I have an amazing husband, high school sweethearts, got married, but I didn't feel whole, right? I was always looking for the one, the soulmate that made me happy. And turns out, spoiler alert, like nobody can do that for you. Nobody makes you whole. Took me a while to figure that out. So I would create all these fantasies in my head about marrying all these other guys, and I wasn't showing up like the wife and the mom that I wanted to be. And it felt internally just like chaos making. So that's how I found recovery, decided to get certified as a certified sex addiction therapist, and now I'm doing this work full time.
Wow. So for both of you, this is a really personal journey that you bring your own selves to this work and your own story. So it's something that you really understand. So let's just jump in with that and talk about what is love addiction versus sex addiction, and then jumping in, how is this different for men and women, you know, in our culture, in our society, and I guess also biologically too.
Okay, so love addiction is this void, like Heather said. It's this need to have someone else complete you. You watch the movies and people say things like, you complete me, and there's soulmate and twin flame, and it's really erotic, and it's really intense, and it's just like, I mean, it's called the twin flame, right? It's not what it looks like, though. It's really an attachment disorder. It's really something inside of you did not connect with your caregivers the way you needed to. So you didn't create that attachment and that bond that you needed. And now you're constantly looking for it, but you don't know what to do when it faces you. And it's overwhelming. And women, it's more cliche or more common for women to identify as love addicts. And then maybe go, okay, I had some sex addiction in there as well. That is changing. But it's like, you know, they talk about women are more into the romance and that kind of thing. And that's where we get caught up in this. It's in the romance, it's in the fantasy, it's in the tantalization, it's in the what's going on in our heads. And there's often a disconnect and a lot of fantasy. And the disconnect is between what's going on in our heads based on this attachment disorder, not knowing what to do with these strong feelings we have for someone, and not being able to handle a friendship because we never attached properly. And now everybody becomes a love sex at interest. And that's all we know how to do.
So everybody becomes what you just said. Everybody becomes a love interest. Can you connect that back to attachment and maybe talk a little bit about, you know, what is attachment? For a lot of people out there listening, you say attachment, they may not even know what that means. So can we jump into a little bit about that and then pull those pieces together?
Sure. So I have a story I'll tell, and then I'm actually going to let Heather cover attachment because she's like totally an attachment guru. And awesome. I learned a lot from her about attachment. And so I'm going to tell you a story. So I had that erotic transference with my therapist years ago. And fast forward, I'm in love addiction recovery. I have a female therapist and I wake up one morning sexually attracted to her. I have never in my life been sexually attracted to a woman before. And I sent her a message. I said, I'm losing my mind. She's like, okay, let's get you in tomorrow. I don't have any openings today. And I get in and I talk to her and she said something to me that changed my life that I feel like sex addiction, love addiction therapists need to say to their clients when this happens, because it will happen.
Sure.
Which
absolutely.
Was, yeah. Lacey, you don't wake up suddenly sexually attracted to and in love with someone like this. And you've never been attracted to a woman before. This tells me this is 100% an attachment wound. You are attaching and bonding with me, which is okay. It's safe. That's important in therapy for people dealing with the trauma and the history you have. But you're not really in love with me. I didn't believe her, but she said, give it a few days and keep telling yourself this. And seriously, like 4 or 5 days later, I was like, I am so not attracted to women. It's like, right. I'm not. But I truly believed, and it was so real. And that really helped me to understand, wow, there's so much more going on here.
So it's so much deeper. There's an undercurrent here of, like, I think Heather was saying earlier, that void, that emptiness, that the only way I know how to feel is through this intensity of some kind of intense relationship. And that idea of romance, that's what I'm starting to hear. Heather, do you want to talk a little bit now? Like, maybe we'll jump back into attachment and what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give the really quick, oversimplified version. So attachment is typically formed in the first 18 months of life, right? When the baby is totally dependent on their caregivers to meet all of their needs. If a caregiver does that appropriately and is totally there for the kid how it needs to be, or how the parent needs to be, then that kid typically has what we call a secure attachment. They understand that I'm safe, other people are safe, and the world is safe. And I can go out and explore my environment and know that my parents have my back, that I can always return to them. If a parent is sometimes there, sometimes not, you know, there are times where the needs are met, there are times when they're not met, that child would typically have what we call an anxious attachment. These are the really clingy kids, right? Because in their mind, if I cling to the parent, then they will finally meet my needs. If the parent is more neglectful and doesn't meet any needs, then the kid typically has what we call an avoidant attachment, where they avoid people. They're no good. They're not around anyways. I can't trust anybody but myself to take care of me. Then finally, the fourth attachment style is called disorganized, and that's created when a parent is the safety net for the kid, but also a source of fear. And that's where you see, as the child grows up, this push-pull mentality, right? I hate you, don't leave me. I love you, get out of my life. Back and forth, it's a roller coaster, right?
Right, yeah.
And we see the three that ended, not the secure attachment. We don't usually see them in therapy. But the other attachment styles, we see using love and sex in a different way, right? Avoidant attachments will use sex to keep their relationships really superficial and not have that emotional intimacy. Whereas anxious attachments are going to be the clingy, you complete me, I need you all the time.
And Lacey, you had raised your hand when Heather talked about that anxious attachment, and that as the example with your therapist, you were clinging to them. Like, that's how you knew how to like stay together. Is that correct?
Yeah. Which was actually like, she was well boundaried. It was like, it's the template for all of my relationships since. And so that was a really healthy place, which a lot of people don't get.
Right. Your therapist is actually able to hold the boundaries and walk you through that experience so that you could actually see it and begin to conceptualize what's going on in your body too, the trauma that comes up when
right.
we do
well,
it.
And the arousal, I don't think we realize that arousal isn't always sexual and romantic. The arousal, I'm using that word loosely, but it's also what it's called. Anytime our emotions are triggered, we're aroused in some way, anger, whatever. It's all a form of arousal. And the arousal I was feeling was not sexual, but I didn't know how to interpret it. It was like this, almost like I'm in love, but I'm in love in a safe way. It's not romantic. It's not sexual. Like, I care about this person and she cares about me. And for the first time in my life, that's totally safe.
Yeah. Heather, you were about to say something.
I was just going to say that happens all the time, right? With the women that we work with, any sort of friendship gets misconstrued as romantic. Sometimes even if somebody's kind to women, that becomes a romantic attraction. So yeah, we see that time and time again, this misinterpretation, because the basis of attachment was not formed in a healthy way.
Yeah. And Heather, you had mentioned earlier too, that there was this emptiness or this hole that you couldn't fill. How does attachment play into that piece too, where, you know, okay, we can't have these relationships, or we have all this anxiety about relationships or avoidance or whatever. But how does that play out?
Yeah. So we all yearn for attachment, right? Our brains, from a survival standpoint, need people. Because if we have people, we survive. So the brain sees that as a safety need. So we are programmed to have people and need people. But if we simultaneously think that people are scary or people aren't going to be there for me when I need them, or for whatever reason we can't trust, then things get really convoluted. And we can either, like I said before, use sex and porn to keep people at a distance, to not, this is what dating looks like for me, is just a bunch of sex, but don't ask me about my family. Right? Keep them at an arm's length, or to keep them coming back because my parents left me. You know, this is unconscious, of course. My parents weren't there for me, but maybe if I give this person enough sex, they will stay around for me.
So we're always trying to connect, but when we have these insecure attachment styles, we're trying to do it in ways that don't really work.
Exactly.
There's a few ways that this plays out too. So like Heather said, there's this, let me just stay avoidant. And it's all about the sex. It's all about whatever. It can be any type of distraction. It's all about the mentorship. It's all about the therapeutic relationship. It's all about whatever, when really it's about us. And then there's the, I'm going to replay my parents not sticking around and me being too needy and them being avoidant. And so it's just what we know. It's what we're comfortable with. So we keep doing it. And then there's the...
But not always consciously. We don't realize we're doing that. It's all under the surface. We don't see it, but we're playing out these early relationships over and over again in our adult relationships. that we're trying to have.
Right. And then there's the whole, like, which is what happened with me and my therapist, a couple of collegial relationships after, which was, this person is safe. They care about me. I care about them. I'm in love. I must be in love. And that's my story, my poor friends.
Right. But that makes a lot of sense because, you know, here you actually are in a relationship that, I guess, like you said, with a therapist that has boundaries, that's appropriate, that shows compassion and kindness, is there kind of in the hard times and the easy times, I guess. I don't know in therapy if it's always easy, but is there. And then, yeah, I can totally see how you would have those feelings like, this feels good. Because it's actually a healthy relationship I'm having with this person. And I don't even know what a healthy relationship is because I have all these templates.
Right. Therefore, I must be in love. I must want to have sex with him.
Right. Yeah. Not true. And so these things start to get confused. So how does that start to manifest over time for these women that come in and see you and are struggling with this? When do they come in and when do they start to say, look, I need some help?
Yeah, you go ahead first, Heather, and then I'll fill in if I haven't.
It's oftentimes something that starts in childhood, which is why the inner child framework works out so well, because the hurts often start in childhood. And that might be when the person is introduced to pornography or sex or have their first crush, and they realize, like, in their inner child brain, that this could, quote unquote, meet a need. And I put that in quotes because it's not truly meeting the need, but it appears to be. So one of the inner child types that we have in the book is the need for control child, right? A kid that grew up in a chaotic environment that then uses relationships with other people as a means to feel like they're in control, right? So they might string men along or date again and again and again and just ghost people because that makes them feel strong.
Right. Let's jump back a little bit because I want to talk about your book, which is about inner child work when a woman is struggling with sex and porn addiction. So I want to jump into that, but can you help the listener understand this idea of an inner child? What does that mean? Because for some people out there, what are you talking about? Inner child? What does that mean? I don't get that.
Yes. So the inner child is actually a framework to help with attachment. So in the inner child model, there is this idea that there is a younger part of us that lives in our head, right? That's called the inner child. And we can give it a name, like for instance, mine might be little Heather, right? And that inner child carries the hurt that happened in childhood that is now being brought to the adult. So in the book, we talk about how the inner child gets triggered. So something in the adult's life reminds the inner child of the hurt in childhood. And then that triggers the inner child to be like, nope, I'm not feeling that again. Let's distract, or let's do this so you can feel okay, right? Let's go find another date so we can feel like we belong, because I don't want to feel this icky feeling. So it's that part of our often unconscious, right? And then we bring it to the conscious so we can know it. It's that part of the unconscious that can then drive us to addictive behaviors because they're like, I'm not dealing with this. Here's a quick fix.
So it's like this part of ourselves that comes from our childhood. So that's why we call it that inner child, because these are the templates that were laid down for us when, you know, we were young. These are the templated relationships. And I guess our inner child wants to play that out because that's what it knows. That's what it understands. That's what it wants to do. Yet in our adult life, it's not always helpful.
Yep, exactly.
So why is this inner child work so important to do with individuals that are struggling, particularly women who are struggling with sex and love addiction, and why do we need to do this work this way?
Well, we act out, we sabotage ourselves because there's this part of us that's just trying to feel safe. Really, a lot of this is about feeling safe and feeling like everything's going to be okay, like Heather said. So we need the attachment, we need the connection, and it's this young part of ourselves, like Heather mentioned, that doesn't really know how to take care of herself in healthy ways. And so she just keeps doing what's always worked or what she's always been looking for. Like for me, that was, oh, I feel safe. I must be in love. And when we can look at that and go, no, this is a young part of me, my little girl, you know, my little girl is activated right now. This young part of me is activated. And I go, she must be feeling safe. She must feel like this person is safe or she wouldn't be having this attraction because that's her trigger. And when I can look at it like that, I can go, oh, this person might actually be safe. This might be my subconscious saying, this person's probably safe. Let me just check that out. As opposed to, I'm definitely in love and I definitely want to have sex with this person. And as we understand what that little girl is trying to tell us, and there's these core emotional triggers like, I'm unsafe. I will always be alone. I'm unlovable. These kinds of triggers that might also be called faulty core beliefs that are activated, and we need to calm those because it's a young part of ourselves thinking that and reassure ourselves that I can take care of this. I can make myself safe because I'm a whole grown up now. Even though I feel I might never be taken care of, I can take care of me. And we have to calm that little girl down.
So that part of ourselves we call the inner child will kind of come up in that, I guess, defensive posture to kind of lead our behavior because it's activated. It's taking off. Our attachment is activated. And what I'm hearing is this is a way we can talk to ourselves in a kind, compassionate way to recognize these, I guess we call them like these younger parts of ourselves that came from our beginnings, our origins.
And I like the younger child model because who's going to be mad at a five-year-old for feeling lonely? A good parent wouldn't. Or a five-year-old who needs to be reassured their love. Or a three-year-old who needs to know they're going to be taken care of. And I feel like this framework makes it so easy to go, oh, well, compassion for a three-year-old feels like this. That's easy. Now let me just give it to myself.
So it gives you a place to start with that. And I was thinking of what you were saying earlier, Heather, you know, growing up in a maybe not so functional childhood where you have parents that aren't modeling healthy emotional intelligence, being able to, you know, be with all kinds of emotions and modeling that it's okay to have emotions, that this inner child is like, oh, I can't have that emotion. You know, I got to do something with this emotion right now. I can't, you're not allowed to have that. Or I, like you said, you know, on the other side of it, I'm feeling it. I must be feeling this way. And where I guess if you have modeling in a home that models regulation, you're going to listen to that feeling. You can talk kindly to that feeling and do something about it. But maybe those of us that didn't get that nurturing in that way, we might not be so good at it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You get to learn how to be the parent that you didn't have or the parent you needed. Or, you know, sometimes it's not always the parent's fault, right? Sometimes there's trauma that's outside of what the parents do, right? Death of a loved one, living in a war zone, that kind of stuff too. But regardless, like you get to be the caretaker that the younger version of you needed.
Right. So can we go into some examples? Because in your book, you break down all the different, what's the right word? I want to say types of inner child that we do. And I would love to talk about a few of them that you think are the most common that would help people understand this concept even a little bit more. So I'm just going to throw that back at you guys and see what you think.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lacey.
Okay. I'll talk about the stress and then you talk about one of yours that you like. So the stressed inner child is one that I have found to be really common. In fact, I on social media shared, you know, the brief synopsis of each child, and the stressed little girl like blew up my Facebook page. And I had people who bought the book because they wanted to learn about the stressed child. And this might just be the people in my life, because like she's one of my key inner children. And the stressed child, she grew up literally being a caregiver. Everything was on her. It was her responsibility. And that might look like your parent has a mental illness or is physically ill, which was my case. And now you're responsible for taking care of the younger siblings and taking care of the house. I was cooking dinner at 6 years old. Apparently I knew how to make pot roast because my cousin, who's my mom's age, was telling me the story years ago. Like, I could not believe you weren't even 7 years old yet and you made a whole pot roast. Wow. What 6 year old knows how to do that? I can't guarantee it tasted good, but you know,
right.
Like that child, she doesn't get to be a child, or there's so much pressure, either whether from parents or some of us do it to ourselves. And this is where our perfectionists come in too. Everything needs to be just so, or I'm not okay. Everyone else needs to be happy and calm, or I'm not okay.
So let me just make sure I understand this. So the stressed child in you was telling you as an adult, look, you've got to be responsible for everybody. You've got to take care of everybody. And the stressed child in a way is running your adult life. Would that be accurate to say that?
Absolutely running the show. I was in college and I asked one of my professors to please give me a B because I couldn't do it myself and I needed to break the cycle. Like it has to be 96% or higher or I failed.
Wow.
And he said, well, that's unethical, but I can take off your extra credit. So he only have 99% instead of 106%. Like,
right. You're like, I had to face my own perfectionism to sit with that discomfort because that the stressed child would not let me be human.
Right. No, she absolutely won't.
Yeah.
She cannot.
Oh, that's a great example. I love that example. That's really good.
Yeah. And then to piggyback off what Lacey was sharing, the stressed child then uses sex, porn, love as a way to calm. Right? We're kind of hectic crazy in our brain all the time as the stressed child. And for a little bit of relief, they turn to one of those addictive behaviors.
Right. To just get out of that feeling.
Right. And she's got a radar going. Who will make me feel better?
Right. Who can I attach to? Who's going to take these feelings away from me? Or not in a healthy attachment, but who can I like lock on to and
who do I need? Who's going to fill this hole in my soul when really she just needs to like learn to meditate and take a deep breath.
Right. Yeah. And heal that wound over time. Heather, did you have one? I know you each are going to share one. Did you have an inner child archetype that you'd like to share?
Yeah. I think another common one is the unnoticed child. So this is a kiddo that kind of gets left behind, gets left out, whether that's at home, or maybe at school with peers, but for whatever reason, they don't belong, right? That is the primary need that they are trying to meet through their addictive behaviors. So the inner child gets triggered when she feels like she doesn't belong. She's not loved. That's when the inner child goes, oh, we got to do something to fix this. And that might be when they start finding a new love interest, right? Or planning the wedding in their head because that's where they belong. Their soulmate is where they belong.
Yeah. On the second date.
Oh, please. Like I had weddings planned after like a couple sentences with a person. Like, let's be real.
And finally getting noticed, right? Like it makes up for that. Like that totally makes sense to me because it's like if you're left behind, you're unnoticed. All of a sudden, this fantasy that wounded child, that inner child can, I guess, heal in that fantasy.
She gets to be noticed. She's in complete control. This person can notice her in every way she ever needed.
Yeah.
She belongs. It's just not real.
And then that would feel so good. But once again, it's like running from that distress, right? Now I'll go attached to this. I keep using the word attached, but I mean, you know, you go use this person to create this feeling that now takes away that pain, whatever that is, the stressed child, the forgotten child, all of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you start to do this work, when clients come in and you start to introduce this concept to them, what's going on and how does that work?
So we start out with basic coping skills, right? Because at first it's very important to be able to stay calm, because as we're looking at childhood experiences and traumas and neglect and all of the really hard stuff, the clients need to know how to handle that without going off the deep end. So that's where we say we have the book and the workbook, and that's great and wonderful, but please make sure that you are doing this with a professional. So we start off with that information. Then once the person's ready to kind of dig in, they can explore the different types of inner children and see where they resonate, right? What their core emotional triggers might be that would then trigger their addiction. And, you know, that's a very short process. It does take quite a while to really identify like what types of inner child they're dealing with. Oftentimes people have multiple different types of inner children. So learning about them, learning what triggers them, what need they're trying to get met through their behaviors, and then how to meet it. Then the final part is being able to recognize, what do I do when I'm triggered? And how can I work with my inner child when triggered to help calm them down, to say, okay, kiddo, like, you can step to the side. Adult me has this. And how that actually looks for each individual person.
And I would imagine that's a really emotional experience to start to do that work. Because like you guys were saying earlier, you dig into that deep trauma, that pain that the younger parts of ourselves were left with.
And trauma work, it's really important that trauma work, especially significant trauma work, sexual trauma, neglect-based trauma, that needs to be worked through with a therapist. Like, I'd love to plug life coaches here, but a therapist needs to help walk you through that trauma, because it can bring up so much and it can be potentially life-threatening. And that is just not a place that you want to mess around.
Yeah, there's so much trauma there. I mean, it's definitely agree with that. It's really important to be able to do that. So let's talk a little bit about putting this into a book and creating this book and writing this book and getting this information out there. Tell me about that process and what brought you to say, okay, we're going to put this book together. I know that Eddie had his book on inner children that a lot of people really resonated with. And so let's jump in there.
Yes.
Eddie found us on Instagram and asked.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I love it. Like, all right.
We're like, yeah.
That is so great.
It was funny. Lacey wasn't able to be at that meeting, and I was totally fangirling because I had actually known Eddie's work. Like, I had a group that went through it, and I was definitely fangirling in the appointment. I was, because I'm a nerd, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I love your work. It's so great. He's kind of like, do you and Lacey want to write a book? And I about died right there.
You're like, I'll do it. That's awesome. I mean, this is such important work to put out there and to put it in the right context for, you know, women who are struggling with love and sex addiction. There's often not a lot of support for them. There's a, you know, especially in our culture, that our misogynistic culture in the sense of our male sexual entitlement. And so they get all the resources for this, but being able to bring that to women to be able to walk through this too, because they're out there struggling as well.
Yeah, they are. And I'll tell you, as I got into Eddie's work, I wasn't really familiar with it. I'd heard a little bit through Heather, who was like, so in this book, I was reading this and I was like, oh, this sounds so great. So when he reached out and then sent me a copy of his books, I was blown away at the implications for women. I really feel this, that God is in this work. Mind you, that's my religion, right? And that this work is, this model is genius. And it brings so much to the table in gentleness and empathy and compassion for women that I haven't seen elsewhere. Like, there's lots of that in, you know, the big names. There's fantastic groundbreakers. You know, everybody in our community knows Marnie Faree and Pia Melody, and to be able to take this personality theory, if you will, or archetypes, like you said, and say, listen, if you had this kind of pain, we see you, and this might be how your love addiction is manifesting. Or if your sex addiction is manifesting like this, do you have this kind of pain? And we say in the book, you're going to relate to multiple inner children, and there may not be one you're like, 100%, that's me. You get to pick and choose. It's this buffet, and you get to pick and choose what it means to you and who your inner child is, and say, these are my triggers. This is how I act out, and it comes from these three different little girls. This was my trauma, and it comes from these four different little girls. And in writing this book, what Heather and I realized early on, and Eddie actually said, you know, this might be true, there were three little girls that don't have necessarily a counterpart in the male model, that being the exploited little girl, which doesn't all have to do with sex, the fragile little girl, and these are the women who are diagnosed as borderline or cluster B personality disorders, you know, the crazy psycho wombat, and the disempowered, which gets into the systemic disempowerment of women and women of color and women with accents. And it really gets into that.
Oh, I love that too, because that talks to culturally how this is different for men and women when we look at our addictions, our issues, our mental health issues, how they reflect differently for men and women based on our culture and what we experience. I love that, being able to see that and then being able to own that part and to have that part validated, that's part of growing up in our culture as a woman. These are the things that, you know, unfortunately, and hopefully it's changing over time, but part of that, our cultural heritage, I guess I should say, that come in. And
well, and I do want to validate that the systemically disempowered child does exist for little boys and men too.
Yeah.
It just doesn't start based on the body parts. It starts when they move into a place where they're a refugee or they're an immigrant or they're the wrong color or they have the wrong accent. But that's still real for men. It just starts with a girl being born for women.
Understood. Thank you so much for saying that and to highlight that part as well, because we have to look at our whole selves to be able to heal. We have to look at all of these pieces to come as a whole person and bring our, I guess, our personhood to this work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So we're a little over our time here. I said 30 minutes, but now we're a little bit over that. But okay, before we wrap up, I love to ask a question of all my guests. And if someone out there is struggling, and maybe they're struggling with this issue, and you could tell them one thing, what would you want them to know? What would you want to tell them?
You are not alone. You are not crazy. You are not broken. And there is hope, and there is help.
And you get to find a recovery community that works for you. If you need to be with all women, if you need to find a BIPOC or women of color meeting, if you need to keep looking for a meeting where other people live or love or talk like you, that's okay. Keep looking.
Awesome. I love it. Where can people find you and where can they find the book?
So I'm at kronemillercounseling.com, and the book is on Amazon. We also have a workbook that goes alongside it.
Awesome.
And you can find me at lacybentley.com. It's LACYBENT as in Tom, LEY.
Awesome. I will put all those links in the show notes at theaddictedmind.com as well. So everybody, you can find that information there. I love this work. I love Eddie's work. I love inner child work too. So thank you both for coming onto the podcast and just sharing your wisdom and your experience and just giving back.
Thanks for having us.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the show notes will be at theaddictedmind.com. So check that out. And that's going to be it for this episode of The Addicted Mind. Now, I have a quick favor to ask you. If you've ever gotten any value from this podcast And if you haven't done so already, please leave us a 5-star rating. And if you're feeling really generous, a review in the app you're using to hear my voice right now takes a couple of seconds. It would be awesome. It goes a long way in helping us share this critical addiction recovery information. So thank you all who have taken the time to do that. All right, everyone, take care. Have a wonderful day. And I will talk to you on the next episode.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.